We drank water and ate seal meat until every man had reached the limit of his capacity. The tents were pitched with oars for supports, and by 3 p.m. our camp was in order. The original framework of the tents had been cast adrift on one of the floes in order to save weight. Most of the men turned in early for a safe and glorious sleep, to be broken only by the call to take a turn on watch. The chief duty of the watchman was to keep the blubber stove alight, and each man on duty appeared to find it necessary to cook himself a meal during his watch, and a supper before he turned in again. Wilde, Worsley, and Hurley accompanied me on an inspection of our beach before getting into the tents. I almost wished then that I had postponed the examination until after sleep, but the sense of caution that the uncertainties of polar travel implant in one's mind had made me uneasy. The outlook we found to be anything but cheering. Obvious signs showed that at spring tides the little beach would be covered by the water right up to the foot of the cliffs. In a strong northeasterly gale, such as we might expect to experience at any time, the waves would pound over the scant barrier of the reef and break against the sheer sides of the rocky wall behind us. Well-marked terraces showed the effect of other gales, and right at the back of the beach was a small bit of wreckage, not more than 3 feet long, rounded by the constant chafing it had endured. Obviously, we must find some better resting place. I decided not to share with the men the knowledge of the uncertainties of our situation until they had enjoyed the full sweetness of rest, untroubled by the thought that at any minute they might be called to face peril again. The threat of the sea had been our portion during many, many days, and a respite meant much to weary bodies and jaded minds. The cliffs at the back of the beach were inaccessible, except at 2 points where there were steep snow slopes. We were not worried now about food, for apart from our own rations, there were seals on the beach, and we could see others in the water outside the reef. Every now and then, one of the animals would rise in the shallows and crawl up on the beach, which evidently was a recognized place of resort for its kind. A small rocky island, which protected us to some extent from the northwesterly wind, carried a ringed penguin rookery. These birds were of a migratory habit and might be expected to leave us before the winter set in fully. But in the meantime, they were within our reach. These attractions, however, were overridden by the fact that the beach was open to the attack of wind and sea from the northeast and east. Easterly gales are more prevalent than western in that area of the Antarctic during the winter. Before turning in that night, I studied the whole position and weighed every chance of getting the boats and our stores into a place of safety out of reach of the water. We ourselves might have clambered a little way up the snow slopes, but we could not have taken the boats with us. The interior of the island was quite inaccessible. We climbed up one of the slopes and found ourselves stopped soon by overhanging cliffs. The rocks behind the camp were much weathered, and we noticed the sharp, unworn boulders that had fallen from above. Clearly there was a danger from overhead if we camped at the back of the beach. We must move on. With that thought in mind, I reached my tent and fell asleep on the rubbly ground, which gave a comforting sense of stability. The fairy princess, who would not rest on her 7 downy mattresses because a pea lay underneath the pile, might not have understood the pleasure we all derived from the irregularities of the stones, which could not possibly break beneath us or drift away. The very searching lumps were sweet reminders of our safety. Early next morning, April 15th, all hands were astir. The sun soon shone brightly, and we spread out our wet gear to dry, till the beach looked like a particularly disreputable gypsy camp. The boots and clothing had suffered considerably during our travels. I had decided to send Wilde along the coast in the Stancomb Wills to look for a new camping ground, and he and I discussed the details of the journey while eating our breakfast of hot seal steak and blubber. The camp I wished to find was one where the party could live for weeks or even months in safety, without danger from sea or wind in the heaviest winter gale. Wilde was to proceed westwards along the coast and was to take with him 4 of the fittest men, Marston, Crean, Vincent, and McCarthy. If he did not return before dark, we were to light a flare, which would serve him as a guide to the entrance of the channel. The Stancomb Wills pushed off at 11 a.m. and quickly passed out of sight around the island. Then Hurley and I walked along the beach towards the west, climbing through a gap between the cliff and a great detached pillar of basalt. The narrow strip of beach was cumbered with masses of rock that had fallen from the cliffs. We struggled along for 2 miles or more in the search for a place where we could get the boats ashore and make a permanent camp in the event of wild search proving fruitless. But after 3 hours' vain toil, we had to turn back. We had found, on the far side of the pillar of basalt, a crevice in the rocks beyond the reach of all but the heaviest gales. Rounded pebbles showed that the seas reached the spot on occasions. Here I decided to depot 10 cases of Bovril sledging ration in case of our having to move away quickly. We could come back for the food at a later date if opportunity offered. Returning to the camp, we found the men resting or attending to their gear. Clark had tried angling in the shallows off the rocks and had secured 1 or 2 small fish. The day passed quietly. Rusty needles were rubbed bright on the rocks and clothes were mended and darned. A feeling of tiredness, due, I suppose, to reaction after the strain of the preceding days, overtook us. But the rising tide, coming further up the beach than it had done on the day before, forced us to labour at the boats, which we hauled slowly to a higher ledge. We found it necessary to move our makeshift camp nearer the cliff. I portioned out the available ground for the tents, the galley, and other purposes, as every foot was of value. When night arrived, the Stancomb Wills was still away, so I had a blubber fire lit at the head of the channel. About 8 p.m. we heard a hail in the distance. We could see nothing, but soon, like a pale ghost out of the darkness, came the boat, the faces of the men showing white in the glare of the fire. Wild ran her on the beach with the swell, and within a couple of minutes we had dragged her to a place of safety. I was waiting Wild's report with keen anxiety, and my relief was great when he told me that he had discovered a sandy spit 7 miles to the west, about 200 yards long, running out at right angles to the coast and terminating at the seaward end in a mass of rock. A long snow slope joined the spit at the shore end, and it seemed possible that a dugout could be made in the snow. The spit, in any case, would be a great improvement on our narrow beach. Wild added that the place he described was the only possible camping ground he had seen. Beyond, to the west and southwest, lay a frowning line of cliffs and glaciers sheer to the water's edge. He thought that in very heavy gales, either from the southwest or east, the spit would be spray-blown, but that the seas would not actually break over it. The boats could be run up on a shelving beach. After hearing this good news, I was eager to get away from the beach camp. The wind, when blowing, was favourable for the run along the coast. The weather had been fine for 2 days, and a change might come at any hour. I told all hands that we would make a start early on the following morning. A newly killed seal provided a luxurious supper of steak and blubber, and then we slept comfortably till the dawn. The morning of April 17th came fine and clear. The sea was smooth, but in the offing we could see a line of pack, which seemed to be approaching. We had noticed already pack and bergs being driven by the current to the east, and then sometimes coming back with a rush to the west. The current ran as fast as 5 miles an hour, and it was a set of this kind that had delayed Wild on his return from the spit. The rise and fall of the tide was only about 5 feet at this time, but the moon was making for full, and the tides were increasing. The appearance of ice emphasized the importance of getting away promptly. It would be a serious matter to be prisoned on the beach by the pack. The boats were soon afloat in the shallows, and after a hurried breakfast all hands worked hard getting our gear and stores aboard. A mishap befell us when we were launching the boats. We were using oars as rollers, and 3 of these were broken, leaving us short for the journey that had still to be undertaken. The preparations took longer than I had expected. Indeed, there seemed to be some reluctance on the part of several men to leave the barren safety of the little beach and venture once more on the ocean. But the move was imperative, and by 11 a.m. we were away, the James Caird leading. Just as we rounded the small island occupied by the ringed penguins, the Willie War swooped down from the 2,000-foot cliffs behind us, a herald of the southerly gale that was to spring up within half an hour. Soon we were straining at the oars with the gale on our bows. Never had we found a more severe task. The wind shifted from the south to the southwest, and the shortage of oars became a serious matter. The James Caird, being the heaviest boat, had to keep a full complement of rowers, while the Dudley Docker and the Stancomb Wills went short and took turns using the odd oar. A big swell was thundering against the cliffs, and at times we were almost driven onto the rocks by swirling green waters. We had to keep close inshore in order to avoid being embroiled in the raging sea, which was lashed snow-white and quickened by the furious squalls into a living mass of sprays. After 2 hours of strenuous labour, we were almost exhausted, but we were fortunate enough to find comparative shelter behind a point of rock.